Hello, and welcome to another exciting Pobscast. We are recording on location in Denver, Colorado. If Dr. Wheatley passes out, it's because of the altitude. We are here with the incoming chair of the Observation Medicine section at ASEP, Dr. Povan Suri. He is very much accomplished in the field of observation medicine. However, he is currently the director of the Internal Medicine Emergency Medicine Program, and he also directs the he's the medical director of the observation unit at Virginia Commonwealth University. So he was going to join us today to maybe enlighten us with some of the items brought up at our section meeting.
Thank you. We had a very successful meeting this morning, which was well attended, and these are exciting times for observation care, especially because many hospitals are facing the challenges of cost cutting and also of RAC audits, where inappropriate admissions are being targeted for clawbacks. So there has been a steady increase in the number of patients who are admitted under observation status in the hospital. And the whole impetus is to provide efficient and cost-effective care. That being said, it's extremely important for the section to disseminate accurate information of what constitutes observation care. It cannot be considered a panacea for what ails the whole system as such. So discussions on readmissions or discussions on patients who require longer than just 23 hours being put in observation are complicated. So one of the main issues that emerged from our meeting this morning was that we need to have a consensus conference where we can bring in folks from different fields, not only just emergency medicine, but also actual people who make decisions on reimbursement issues from the government, as well as from different specialties, and then put together a consensus statement on what we can reasonably achieve, and also educate people on what observation medicine is all about. And from this will emerge a white paper, which we are hoping can be widely disseminated.
So would this be the very first kind of conference for observation medicine of this nature?
That is correct. There have been conferences in the past, both by for-profit organizations as well as academic centers like Emory, which have focused largely on setting up of observation units, staffing them, making them financially feasible and such. But there has been to date no consensus conference, and it's high time that we did one because there is misinformation out there.
As you mentioned, I think, and I liked what you said, kind of getting back to your point that observation medicine can't be seen as a panacea. You know, it can't be seen by hospital administration as this is the way that we're going to take care of all the patients that really should be admitted or really meet criteria for admission. And I think it's important, implicit on us as, I guess, leaders in the field and experts in the field to come out, I guess, with a strong statement of what we believe OBS is meant for and how it's meant to be carried out.
Absolutely. And this is why we want to disseminate information on observation and the confusion that surrounds observation. Primarily is around observation status versus observation care. And unfortunately, both of them don't gel together. Observation status is basically a status which is a peer status. And observation care is what we provide as emergency physicians or even other specialties to patients who we can expeditiously treat or manage and then determine whether they need to be discharged or whether they need to be admitted. And numerous studies have shown that when these patients are treated in a structured environment, be it a unit or an area of the hospital, they do much better. right now, most of the hospitals have virtual observation. A patient anywhere in the hospital can be designated as observation, and that leads to some inefficiencies in care. So that is the first thing that we need to obviously make the public understand. The other unfortunate thing that's happened is that observation is considered an outpatient status. And what that has evolved into is the fact that there's a 20% copay that's associated with an outpatient charge. And if a patient is put in observation, and they end up staying in observation status for more than a day, sometimes 2 or 3 or 4 days, that enormous hospital bill saddles a patient with a 20% copay, which is exorbitant, and that is the basis for the class action lawsuit against CMS on this very problem. So once it becomes apparent that there are different kinds of observation. There's a simple OBS, which I call protocol-driven single problem OBS, that can easily be taken care of in an ED observation unit. But observation, I've always said, is a heterogeneous entity. There is simple OBS and there's complex OBS. And complex, a good example would be a 22-year-old female with pyelonephritis, a high fever, tachycardic, who you just need to admit for IV antibiotics and hydration. That would be a simple OBS. It can be done under protocol. A complex OBS would be a 22-year-old female with a liver kidney transplant who has got 3 anti-rejection medications on, who has had small bowel obstruction in the past and comes in with a fever and pyelonephritis. Now that is a different animal altogether. And to take care of that patient in an observation setting needs skills, training, and resources that go beyond what a simple observation unit can provide. And so you cannot equate a simple OBS with complex OBS. And therein lies this inherent conflict of what can be done in an observation unit. So observation units themselves have to be defined first as to what they are trying to achieve. Simple versus complex OBS. And that is also the reason why in our meeting we decided that observation is something that will necessarily have to be performed by different groups of specialists: emergency physicians, family practitioners, internal medicine physicians, because it takes more than just a single skill set to deal with a whole plethora of observation cases.
Talk a little bit about the, education initiatives that we had discussed. I know at one point it was brought up in the meeting. We likened it a little bit to ultrasound and how people who have been out practicing 5 years or greater maybe have a few skills when it comes to ultrasound. However, folks coming out of residency now are very facile with ultrasound, and it's just one of these things that's assumed now to be part of the curriculum in residencies. And so when they come out, as was said, they come to their first day on the job and they say, "Where's my ultrasound machine?" when they go to see their patients. Similarly, we want observation care to be seen in that light, where residents are exposed to it throughout their training, and when they come out, know how to manage observation patients, know how to work within the confines of an observation unit. But I didn't know if you want to talk a little bit about...
Yes, absolutely. And that is one topic that's very close to my heart. Actually, you hit my heart there with this ultrasound thing, because when I trained, there was no ultrasound and we never used it. And it's been a struggle for me to actually get up to speed. It's taken me more than a few years to actually start looking for that ultrasound machine. So traditionally, if you have a group of ED physicians who have been out, say, about more than 5 years and are practicing right now, and you ask them if they're willing to work in an observation unit, in a group, between 10 and 20% will willingly do it, and about 80% will absolutely refuse to work in an observation unit. And the reason for that is multifactorial. An ED physician is a disposition-driven animal. And a good ED physician knows the disposition of a patient even before they enter the room. Observation care is not internal medicine, but it's subacute care. And that is something that is not in the DNA of an ED physician yet. Though, if they're exposed in their training to observation care, and it's an easily teachable skill, and are taught that, and they understand that that gives them an avenue to basically diversify, they will embrace it. And the proof of the pudding is that we started at VCU an observation unit rotation, a required rotation for second year residents. It was not an elective. It was not something that they could choose to do. They had to do it. And we are going to publish a paper very soon on it. And all the graduates of a program who have then gone on to different jobs have always come back to us and have been very interested in starting the observation unit, which gives them another opportunity to actually diversify their skills and to be able to divide their time and remain happy and successful and have a sense of well-being in their profession. Doing 14, 18 shifts a month in a high volume setting is sustainable only so far. And diversification is what we're all looking for. And once they start looking at it as something that'll be another opportunity to do something else, as well as give them satisfaction, more and more ED physicians who are graduating now will embrace it.
One of the things I didn't realize about observation medicine until I became more entrenched was the different aspects of what I wanted to do that were incorporated into observation medicine already. Things like administrative responsibility, negotiation, and cost effectiveness and quality, all of those things are already part of observation medicine. And there's a lot of graduates who say they want to get an MPH or some kind of master's in health sciences, things of that nature, who say that, you know, they want these things in their life. However, they are not necessarily exposed to observation medicine being the way to get there.
That is extremely well put, because observation units are almost like a microcosm of what a big emergency department is. So it would, in my mind, be a perfect stepping stone to eventually being even a chair of emergency medicine somewhere, because you're dealing with exactly the same issues that you would deal in running a big department at a smaller level. So it involves personnel management. It involves a lot of administration. It involves financial savvy, and it involves a set of clinical skills that goes beyond the emergency department. The big detriment to doing observation medicine for ED physicians used to be an inability to convince the administration of the value they bring in and to get adequately reimbursed for it, by which I will actually expand on that, is getting release time or getting a stipend for being a director of an observation unit. It's very fortunate that now we have more and more data that's accumulating about the cost effectiveness of these units. And Chris Baugh from Harvard just published a very, very inclusive and important article on what potential savings can be achieved with every single observation admission. And he's on the conservative side. Armed with that data, an emergency physician can go to the administration, ask for a directorship stipend, ask for release time, and actually be able to do this in an effective manner where they're not working for free and they're not being burdened with more responsibilities than they can handle without being reimbursed for them.
Yeah, the topic was brought up of defining an observation medicine service line, and this would be multi-dimensional in terms of its approach. It's not just EM physicians. We had talked about engaging the Hospitalist Medicine Society. We talked about engaging ENA, the Emergency Nurses Association, as well as the Physician Assistant Nurse Practitioners Association, just in terms of defining you know, where care is to be delivered and what models, you know, and I think hearkening back a little bit to the simple versus complex obs, because you know, some folks, whether they may just have complex medical issues or social issues that maybe more than a typical ED OBS unit can handle, maybe that would be better handled in an inpatient OBS unit where you have more availability of consultants, but where care is still intended on being wrapped up in the next, you know, 24 hours, et cetera. But to better define that, you know, going forward, I think is important, and I think was one of the big ideas and big initiatives out of the meeting this morning.
And absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if you truly look around the country right now, many people who have been doing OBS like me have realized the heterogeneity of the population. And folks at places like University of Michigan now have two distinct units. They have an ED observation unit, which has simple protocolized patients who can move in and out quickly. And then they have a complex observation unit, which is also a part of the emergency department, but it has patients who are more set up to be handled by internists or hospitalists or a combination of emergency internal medicine physicians. And they both run on a slightly separate track. One is more resource intensive, one is less resource intensive. And an ability to separate those out makes the process much more efficient. So let us talk about, in an ideal utopian world, where would we be tomorrow? If I could have a magic wand and change things completely, where would I go? Number one, I would change observation from an outpatient status to something different where the patient is not saddled with a copay, because it's unfair, it's effective care for which the patient is being unnecessarily penalized. The second thing I would do is that I would modify the interqual criteria so that they recognize this cohort of patients who may not qualify as inpatients, but they are not simple OBS patients. So I would create a category of simple observation with an expected outcome of discharge, hopefully within 23 hours. That would basically be another category which should not be saddled with simple OBS. And going back to Chris Paw's article, it's quite evident that the duration of stay of OBS, as it starts going up beyond 15 or 16 or 17 or 20 hours, is where the benefits of OBS disappear, because the indirect costs start adding on. And then there is no difference between inpatient versus OBS. So doing that is counterproductive completely. So that's where we should be headed, and that's where we should affect policy. And once we have policy aligned with good care, that is what the Holy Grail is. And it's, we try it, but we're only partially successful so far. So financial incentives of paying the hospitals by the insurance companies or CMS are right now not completely aligned with the level of care being provided. And we are all working together to basically achieve that.
Well, you know, you've got a tall order for the next 2 years. but we look forward to working with you closely in the future. And we look forward to your insights. And hopefully you can direct our specialty to new and exciting directions.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Congratulations. And we, again, look forward to working with you. And, you know, like you said, it's an exciting time for the specialty. And I'm sure we're only going to go good places from here. So.
We all hope so.
All right.
Consensus conference.
All right.
Yes, the last thing in Pandora's box when everything disappeared was hope.
Okay. So on that note, if you don't have OBS, you have a problem. Thank you so much.